Protocols of the Meetings of the Learned Elders of Zion. Protocol Number 10, Preparing for Power. 1. Today I begin with a repetition of what I said before, and I beg you to bear in mind that governments and people are content with the outside appearances of their political process. And how, indeed, are the goyim to see the deeper meaning of things when their representatives are mainly focused on enjoying themselves? For our policy, it is of the greatest importance to be aware of this fact. It will be of assistance to us when we come to consider how to delegate the proper authority in matters of property, of housing, of taxation, including the idea of concealed taxes, and of the automatic enforcement of the laws. All these questions are such that they should not be touched upon or debated directly in public. In cases where it is necessary to touch upon them, the details of those cases must not be specifically discussed. It must merely be declared that the principles of current law are acknowledged by us. The reason for keeping silence in this respect is that by not naming a principle, we leave ourselves some freedom to drop this or that out of it, without attracting notice. If the principles of law we were supposed to be following were all categorically named, they would appear to have been proven true. 2. The mob cherishes a special affection and respect for the geniuses of political power, and accepts all their deeds of violence with the admiring response, "Unscrupulous." Well, yes, it is unscrupulous, but it's clever. A mischievous trick, if you like, but how craftily played, how magnificently done, what barefaced daring. Our goal, world power. 3. We depend upon attracting all nations to the task of building our new political structure. The project plan for this has been drawn up by us. This is why, before everything, it is essential for us to arm ourselves and to install in ourselves that absolutely reckless, daring, and unstoppable motivation which will break down all hindrances on our way. 4. When we have accomplished our government overthrow, we shall then say to the various peoples, "Everything has gone terribly wrong. Everyone has been worn out with suffering. We are destroying the causes of your torment, nationalities, borders, different currencies. You are free, of course, to pronounce sentence upon us, but can it possibly be a just one, if you pronounce it before you properly try out what we are offering you?" Then the mob will praise us, and give us their support, in a unanimous triumph of hopes and expectations. Voting, which we have made the instrument that will set us on the throne of the world, by teaching even the very smallest units of members of the human race to vote by means of meetings and agreements by groups, will then have served its purposes, and will play its part then, for the last time, by a unanimity of desire to make close acquaintance with us before condemning us. 5. To secure this, we must have everybody vote without regard to their social class or qualifications, in order to establish an absolute majority, which can't get from the educated wealthy classes. In this way, by impressing in all a sense of self-importance, we shall destroy among the goyim the importance of the family and its educational value, and remove the possibility of individual minds splitting off, because the mob majority, who is handled by us, will not let them come to the front, nor even give them a hearing. It is accustomed to listen to us only, who pay it for obedience and attention. In this way, we shall create a blind, mighty force, which will never be in a position to move in any direction, without the guidance of our agents, set at its head by us, as leaders of the mob. The people will submit to this regime, because it knows that it will depend upon these leaders for its earnings, gratifications, and the receipt of all kinds of benefits. 6. A scheme of government should come ready-made from one brain, because it will never be clinched firmly, if it is allowed to be split into fractional parts, in the minds of many. It is allowable, therefore, for us to have knowledge of the scheme of action, but not to discuss it lest we disturb its cunning, the interdependence of its component parts, and the practical force behind the secret meaning of each clause. To discuss and make alterations in this manner, by means of much voting, gives those alterations the appearance of have being arrived at, by the process of logical and methodical reasoning. And any misunderstandings of these alterations will prevent the public from seeing into the next connected link of our scheme. We want our schemes to be forcible and suitably devised. Therefore, we ought not to let our well-thought-out plans be revealed to the public as a whole, or even to a select group of them. 7. These schemes will not turn existing institutions upside down, just yet. They will only affect changes in their economy, and consequently, in the whole combined movement of their progress, which will then be directed along the paths laid down in our schemes. The poison of liberalism. 8. In each country, there exists a group of governing bodies. They go under various names, but they are essentially the same thing, namely, the representation, ministry, senate, state council, legislative and executive corps. I needn't explain how these institutions relate to one another, because you are aware of all that, but take note of the fact that each of the above-named institutions corresponds to some important function of the state, and by important I don't mean the institution, but its function. That is, it's not the institutions that are important, but their functions. These institutions have divided up among themselves all the functions of government, administrative, legislative, executive, and they operate together in much the same way as organs in the human body. If we injure one part in the machinery of state, the state falls sick, like a human body, and will die. 9. When we introduced into the state organism the poison of liberalism, its whole political complexion changed. States have been seized with a mortal illness, a blood poisoning. All that remains is to await the end of their death agony. 10. Liberalism produced constitutional states, which took the place of what was the only safeguard of the goyim, namely, despotism. And a constitution, as you well know, is nothing but a system of strife, misunderstandings, quarrels, disagreements, fruitless party agitations, party whims, in a word, a system of everything that serves to destroy the personality of state activity. The tribe of the talking heads has, no less effectively than the press, condemned the rulers to inactivity and impotence, and thereby rendered them useless and superfluous, and this is the reason why they have been removed from office in many countries. At that point, the era of republics could come into being, and then we replaced the ruler with a mockery of a government by a president taken from the mob, from the midst of our puppet creatures, or slaves. This was the foundation of the time bomb, which we have placed under the Goy people, or I should rather say, under the Goy peoples. 11. Soon we shall assign the duties of presidents. 12. By that time, we shall be in a position to disregard the procedures normally required to accomplish our necessary tasks, because our impersonal puppet will be able to do it directly. What do we care if the ranks of those striving for power should be weakened, if a deadlock arises from the impossibility of finding presidents, a deadlock which will finally disorganize the country. 13. In order that our scheme may produce this result, we shall arrange elections in favor of such presidents who have some dark, undiscovered disgrace in their past, some sinister secret, then they will be trustworthy agents for the accomplishment of our plans, out of fear of revelations, and from the natural desire of everyone who has attained power, namely, the retention of the privileges, advantages, and honor connected with the office of president. The Chamber of Deputies will provide cover for, will protect, and will elect presidents, but we shall take from it the right to propose new laws, or make changes to existing laws, for this right will be given by us to the president responsible, who is a really just puppet in our hands. Naturally, the authority of the presidents will then become a target for every possible form of attack, but we shall provide him with a means of self-defense, in the right of an appeal to the people. The decision of the people outranks the decision of the representatives, who may wish to oppose the president. So, that appeal will go to a blind slave of ours, the majority of the mob. Independently of this, we shall give the president the right of declaring a state of war. We shall justify this last right, on the ground that the president, as chief of the whole army of the country, must have access to that right, in case he needs to defend the new Republican Constitution. That right to defend will belong to him, as the responsible representative of this Constitution. 14. It should be easy to understand that under these conditions, the magic lamp will be in our hands, and no one other than us will any longer have control over determining legislation. 15. Besides this, we shall, with the introduction of the new Republican Constitution, take from the chamber the right of inserting new legislation on government measures, on the pretext of preserving national security, and further, we shall use the new Constitution to reduce the number of representatives to a minimum, thereby proportionately reducing political passions and the passion for politics. If, however, these passions should burst into flame, which is hardly to be expected, not even to a small degree, we shall nullify them by a stirring appeal and making a reference to the majority opinion of the voting population. The president will have the power to appoint the presidents and vice presidents of the chamber and the senate instead of constant sessions of parliaments. We shall reduce their sittings to a few months. Moreover, the president, as chief of the executive power, will have the right to summon and dissolve parliament, and, in the latter case, to prolong the time for the appointment of a new parliamentary assembly. These presidential actions may be considered illegal, and as a result, the representatives and public might then start attacking the president. This could be a problem for our plans, if it happened prematurely. In order to avoid the blame from being pushed onto the president, we shall encourage ministers and other officials of the higher administration to evade his plans by taking actions of their own. In doing so, they will be made scapegoats in his place. This part we especially recommend should be played by the Senate, the Council of State, or the Council of Ministers, but not by an individual official. 16. The president will, at our discretion, interpret the meaning of existing laws, and point out that there are already various interpretations of them. He will further annul them, when we indicate to him the necessity to do so. Besides this, he will have the right to propose temporary laws, and even new departures in the government's constitutional working. The pretext, both, for doing these things will be the requirements for the supreme welfare of the state. We shall destroy. 17. By these actions we shall obtain the power of destroying the constitutions of the states. We shall do this by introducing into those constitutions little by little, step by step, all those things which we have determined are our rights from the outset. This will cause an imperceptible abolition of every kind of constitution, and then the time will have come to turn every form of government into our despotism. 18. The recognition of our despot may also come before the destruction of the constitution. The moment for this recognition will come when the peoples, utterly wearied by the irregularities and incompetence, a matter which we shall have arranged for, will exclaim of their rulers, "Away with them, and give us one king over all the earth, who will unite us, and annihilate the causes of disorders, frontiers, nationalities, religions and state debts, who will give us peace and quiet, which we cannot find under our rulers and representatives." 19. But you yourselves know perfectly well that to produce the possibility of the expression of such wishes by all the nations, it is necessary to trouble the people's relations with their governments in all countries to such a degree that it will utterly exhaust humanity with dissension, hatred, struggle, envy, and even by the use of torture, by starvation, by the spreading of diseases, or extreme poverty. As a result of this, the Goyim will see no other solution than to take refuge in our complete sovereignty, in our money, and in all else that we offer. 20. But if we give the nations of the world a breathing space, the moment we long for is hardly ever likely to arrive.